Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for stopping by tonight. I've got some very special guests tonight. I'm here with three of my grandchildren, and we had a long conversation today. As most of you know, school is out, so the kids are home. So we talked a little bit about what's going on in the schools, and I think you're going to be kind of surprised about some of the things they say. Even though most of you know on a nightly basis I talk about some of the tragedies that happen in some of our local schools, especially here in Florida, it happens quite a bit. Suicides and injury done to kids by other kids, my own grandson included. The first person that I'd like to talk to has talked on the show before very quickly, but nonetheless said words and gave information that was pretty pertinent to what's going on. His name is AJ, and he is 6 years old, and he was in kindergarten this year. So I'm going to ask him some questions, and we'll get some answers from him. Hi, AJ. How are you?
Good.
Do you see kids being bullied in school?
Yes.
What happens?
Well, some of the kids, like, punch other kids in the stomach and run away and take their tongue out at the kids.
Uh-huh. Talk that louder.
They really be mean to them.
And what happens if you see somebody being mean to another kid? What do you do?
I try to find a teacher or tell mine or a principal.
Uh-huh. But have you ever said anything to the kid that's being mean?
Yes, a lot of times.
And didn't you, in the beginning of the school year, have some problems with one of the little boys in your class?
Yes.
And what happened with that? How did you finally make that better?
I told him what it's going to be like when he grows up. So he finally decided to stop being mean to other people.
What did you tell him would happen if he kept being mean?
He's going to turn out being has to work for other people here. I mean, he doesn't want to do that. He wants to have a really nice house and have a really nice wife, so.
Keep talking loud so people can hear you. So he wants to have a good job is what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm trying to.
Yeah, he wants to have a good job and he wants to have people trust him and respect him, right?
Yes.
And what did you tell him would happen if he kept being mean? That he wouldn't get that kind of respect?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so now what has happened with him?
He has changed a lot. He has been nicer to other students.
Really? Mm-hmm. And he was really being mean to one of your other friends, right?
Yes, a lot.
Uh-huh. But now that stopped?
Stopped.
Uh-huh. And so next year you're going to be in first grade. Are you going to be able to deal with that the same way? If you see kids being mean, are you going to speak to them?
If they don't stop, I'll try to get a teacher or principal.
Okay. And we also had one of AJ's friends with us who is 8 years old. And she said, yes, that sometimes they get picked on. One of the things that these kids said, though, even though little kids have a tendency to touch other kids, there wasn't the kind of violence amongst these elementary school kids that we often talk about with some of the older kids. Although it's not unusual for another, like, six-year-old to hit the back of another child or kick somebody or doing something like that, but there's no out-and-out fighting. And it also seems as though teachers are paying much closer attention when they're this age and they are, you know, they're stopped in midstream so it doesn't get so far. But I was quite proud of my grandson because he had told me about this little boy that he was having trouble with, and he told me what he said to them. And now he and this particular child are good friends, and hopefully they'll go through grade school together as best friends. That's what we're hoping for, isn't it, AJ?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you. You can go watch your show. Thanks for helping. Now I have somebody who just left middle school, and I have somebody who is in high school. So I'm going to ask some questions and let the boys answer the questions. In middle school, Austin, do you see a lot of violence?
Well, I don't see much of any violence, Grandma, but I do see verbal talk, you know, like picking on other kids and, you know, calling them names and stuff like that, that I see a lot.
Uh-huh. And what do you, does anybody get involved besides teachers when you see things like that?
No.
Mm-hmm. Do teachers get involved?
Sometimes, yes.
Uh-huh. And, but you've never seen any, like, altercations, like somebody beating up somebody else?
Never.
Or hurting anybody?
Never.
Mm-hmm. And how do you think most of the kids feel about the verbal bantering? Do you think they think it's just a part of being young teenagers, or and they deal with it themselves, or do you think it hurts some of their feelings?
Well, I think both right here. I think that sometimes they do get hurt, and they do say stuff back to them, but I think deep down inside it does hurt their feelings, and I don't know. Maybe it does. But they do pick on them back, you know. They do say stuff back to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I do think it does hurt a little bit, maybe.
Can you mention something about the way you felt about when you see other kids picking on kids that have got challenges?
Oh, I stop them.
Mm-hmm.
I tell them to stop. That's not right. I mean, imagine if you were that kid and mm-hmm. somebody walked by you and picked on you like that. How would you feel, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's not right. I don't think
and
it's right.
And is that what you say to the other kids?
Yes. Yes,
mm-hmm.
ma'am.
And does that usually stop it?
That day, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it is something that's ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the teachers in the middle school? Do you feel that the teachers have an upper hand on what's going on, or do you think they pretty much let things happen unless they escalate into an altercation?
They do stop it when they see it. They
mm-hmm.
only stop it when they see it. Most of the time it's done somewhere else, like a bathroom or
mm-hmm.
the gymnasium or the library.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it's not seen by a lot of teachers.
I see. And, okay, I'm gonna ask you some other questions after we talk to Josh about the high school. Josh is in high school, and I kind of want to ask the same questions. Joshua, do you see any physical altercations in your school?
No physical, but verbal, just like Austin said.
Mm-hmm. And something interesting that the boys told me today, who do you think are the meanest students?
The girls are.
And why do you think that?
I don't know. The most gossip I hear, most bad talking is from the girls. The guys just usually get over it.
Mm-hmm. And but you, at your high school, you've never seen any physical altercations?
No.
Not even pushing or shoving or anything like that?
Well, I never know how it got started, but, you know, I've probably seen altercation, but I don't know how it got started.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And do the teachers in high school get involved in any kind of thing that might happen in the hallway? Do they stop it before it gets out of hand?
Yeah, some teachers are standing outside of the hallway
mm-hmm.
when the classes are in change, and they hear some noise, they'll stop the
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
altercation.
Right. And how do you feel about kids that gang up on somebody that would be considered a challenge student?
I stick up for the challenge student. It's not right to gang up on somebody.
Mm-hmm. But you really feel that way about all of them, don't you?
Yeah, anybody.
Anybody getting picked on. Okay, and I want to ask you both this same question. Do you both feel safe in your schools?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I feel pretty safe.
Okay, well, that's a good thing. Both of these boys go to school in West Palm Beach. I'm not going to name the schools that they go to. But I do think it's nice that we're being told that they feel safe. Now I want to ask both of the boys how they feel if they are at a, we have a couple nice parks here in Palm Beach. How do you feel if you're at a park with a gang of you? I'm going to address Austin first. And how do you feel if you're at a park and guys come up, or guys and girls come up, and kind of like harass you a little bit? Does that ever happen?
Yeah, sometimes, but usually I you know, I give them a look and I kind of walk away, you know, so I don't start any, like, altercations or, you know, pick a fight with somebody.
And if a fight did incur, if somebody walked up to you, Os, and pushed you or something, you'd fight back.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah.
Okay. And would you expect, if that happened to you in school, if somebody pushed you from behind especially, and you turned around and fought back, you know you'll be suspended.
Yes, I will.
Mm-hmm. And how do you feel about that?
I think that I should get punishment for fighting back, but I don't really think I should get suspended. I think the kid that started it with me should get more of a punishment. I mean, I should get, you know, like a detention or something like that I served before or after school.
Mm-hmm.
The kid that pushed me and started the fight, maybe should get, you know, 3 days, 2 days of suspension out of school to get his, you know, his head straight.
So you'd be willing to receive some kind of punishment for being involved in an altercation, but if you're not the one that started it, even though you know there's a no fighting policy,
mm-hmm.
there's a no, you know, no touching other students kind of policy,
mm-hmm.
and you'd be all right with a detention, but you don't think it's fair if somebody goes to hurt you and you stick up for yourself and don't get beat up,
mm-hmm.
that you should receive the same punishment. Am I right on that?
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And has anything like that ever happened to you?
Well, I've been to a couple middle schools, and yeah. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
it has happened before.
Mm-hmm. I'm remembering a time when you got up from your seat in the lunchroom, and your tray was there and everything, and you were sitting beside your friend, and somebody came over, moved your tray, and sat in your seat.
Yes, ma'am.
And you got in trouble for that.
Mm-hmm.
And when you came back to the seat, if I recall, you may correct me if I am wrong, you asked the kid to get out of your seat, right?
Mm, yes, yes, I did.
Uh-huh. And what happened after that?
He told me no. I said, you know, I was sitting here first. You know, you can get up and move to the next seat over. And then he started getting a little bit meaner and started, you know, calling me stuff and started talking about my family, you know, my mom, my grandma. And so I kind of got a little bit mad about that.
And what happened?
Oh, we fought.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of, yeah.
You just pushed each other around a
mm-hmm.
little bit, right? There
mm-hmm.
was no punches to the face or anything like that. But you did punch each other or push each other
yeah.
around, right?
After that, it got someone, a teacher grabbed me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you were, what, in-house suspension or something like that, I remember.
In-school suspension.
Yeah. And did you feel that that was right, even though you felt a little bit righteous about what happened
mm-hmm.
because he took your seat, but
mm-hmm.
you still understood that you had to be punished
yep.
because, okay, good. Joshua?
Yep.
Same for you. Have you ever had anything like that happen in school?
No. I don't get into many fights. I just bite my tongue and, you know, get over with it. I don't.
You are one of my easiest going grandchildren. If you were in school, you for a long time you went to school with your sister,
mm-hmm.
and you and your sister are very, very close, and your sister is a real pretty girl, and she gets picked on quite a bit, doesn't she, from other girls?
Yeah, but she usually handles herself, but
yeah.
if a guy did something, then yeah, I would be there.
Mm-hmm. And do you find the school that you're going to up here in West Palm Beach to be feel any safer or any more organized as far as that kind of stuff is concerned than the West schools that you've been to?
I really think all high schools are the same. Neither one, I can't tell the difference.
Okay.
It's just, I don't know,
mm-hmm.
it's not much different about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I think that those are good answers. And how do you feel about being at a mall or at a park or something like that? And say you and Austin and Mikey and maybe even some of the littler kids were all at the park to play basketball, which you do a lot, and another gang of kids came up and started trouble with you. Has that ever happened, first of all?
I think so.
No?
No, I don't think so.
Nobody's ever harassed you or told you to get off the court because it's their basketball court or they want to play now or anything
no,
like that?
But if they did, I still wouldn't get off the court because they don't have the right. No, that's never happened to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, boys, very much. I certainly appreciate all of your input. And good job. And I hope that other teenagers were listening tonight and heard your very level heads. So, thanks. So, folks, as you heard first from my very young grandchild, who handled himself very nicely in his school, and from the older boys, I guess all the episodes that we hear about maybe are a little bit of media frenzy. But as I explained to the boys today when we had our long talk, do you think you would recognize somebody who was really in pain? Maybe not from being picked on in school, but for other reasons. And they have met some girls that they feel kind of like get real sad and real depressed, and they know that they've hurt themselves and things like that. So they're aware of that. And one of the other questions I asked them, but they asked to not talk about it personally on the show, was about the behavior in regard to homosexuality. So I'm going to tell you what they said. I asked them if they were aware of that going on in their schools, and they both smiled at me and said, of course, we are. And I said, amongst boys? And they said, no, never. We never see any interaction between boys, even though we know we have homosexual guys in school. But they're always cool. They don't, you know, they don't do anything that would embarrass anybody. They did, however, tell me that it was commonplace to see young girls be together in school and hold hands and things like that. And I said, does that bother you? And as I said, Joshua is 17 and Austin is almost 16. And they both said, no, you know, they're, you know, it's a part of their time in our lifetimes where it's become a lot more open and a lot more, I don't know, I'm trying to choose my words wisely. I don't want to say commonplace because I don't think they think it's commonplace. But they're more, the kids today are more of a live and let live kind of group of people. And maybe because of all the versatility that has slowly made its way into our world, I'm pretty open-minded. When I was 16, I had my first encounter with transvestite because I was on Miami Beach and met my first transvestite, and I was like, I came home and asked my mother and father all kinds of questions that they couldn't really answer. My kids, my teenagers today, my grandchildren wouldn't even think twice. That would not shock them or make them say anything. They just say, yeah, that's a transvestite, Graham. You know, they wouldn't even think twice about it. And the same goes for homosexuality. So I have a lot of teenagers in my life, and I talk to them openly about these things. So all the stuff that we see that is in the media and in the newspapers and on the computer and on television, I believe, is orchestrated. The hateful things are orchestrated by our adults, which is sad for me because I think the kids are a lot more forgiving and the kids believe you should be able to live your life the way you want to live your life. And I think that's very commendable. And I'm quite proud of my teenagers because they have open minds. My 20-year-old grandson is very open-minded as well. So I do believe that a lot of the concern that's out there is generated by the adult. So again, we're right back where my first lecture started. It's all about us. It's all about what we say and what we do and how we perceive what's going on around us. And it's our minds that need to be adjusted, and it's our thoughts that need to be adjusted, not so much with the kids. Now, I know after watching the Bully movie that kids are picked on. Now, I did say to my teenagers today, what about the kid that walks up and says, ugh, where'd you get your shoes, Kmart? And they both laughed, and they said, that happens all the time, but we just hand it back. And it's like messing with each other. But it doesn't come to blows, you know. It's like a game. And I said, but what if those are from Kmart? And what if that's all you can afford? And what if it hurts your feelings? They both looked at me and said, it might. Some kids, Graham, but they don't play off of it. It might hurt them later, but it's not something that's really open. And because we all know how to dish back, we just hand back what's handed to us. So even though I wish that wasn't so, I also understand that the fact that they can handle it is a good thing. I often remember I only have one daughter. And after being raised with three brothers and my youngest brother, who's only 10 months older than my oldest son, so it was like four boys and one girl, she's pretty tough and pretty outspoken. And I remember being mortified when I heard her tell somebody off when she was like 14, I think. We were in a grocery store, and she turned around, here's this older man staring at her butt. And she went off on him, and I was like, Diana. And then I stepped back, and I thought, you know what? Maybe I want her to be like that. Maybe I want her to not be afraid to speak up. It's a tough decision to make when you're watching your kids grow up and who they become and what kind of adults they become. I like to believe that most of the kids in my life, not just my own children, but my nieces and my nephews and all the kids that I'm involved with and my grandchildren, are all kind people. I don't think any of them would intentionally hurt somebody. They're certainly not perfect. As I've mentioned before, I've yet to meet the perfect person. And they've certainly made plenty of mistakes, just like their forefathers. But they're kind, and they do care about people, and they are the type that would stick up for somebody that was being picked on. We did discuss tonight if they ever saw anything like what happened to their cousin Michael, what would they do? And immediately, even the six-year-old said, I'd be right there helping. And I said, don't think about it being somebody you love. Think about it being a perfect stranger. Then would you still want to help? And they all said yes. So, of course, you never know until you're in that position. But I do believe that they would. But I think one of the other issues this opens up is, like I said before, the media. And I have a lot of respect for the media. And I also have been very annoyed with the media in my lifetime. But they're doing their jobs, so you have to be respectful. And a lot of people want to know all the bad stuff. We kid about the fact that if you were to do a show that didn't have any bad stuff in it, nobody would listen. Very sadly, people want to hear the tragedy and the things that, you know, hurt your heart and make you have disdain and dislike and sometimes hatred for someone else. I wish I knew why. I wish I knew what the answer to that was. But I do believe that most of us would rather be kind and care about what is going on in front of our faces if somebody is being hurt. But as I said, I liked what they said to me about the schools. And we're talking about three entirely different schools. And I questioned them for quite a long time today and asked them about every scenario I could think of that as an adult would have me upset. I asked them if they've ever had a teacher that they thought was rude and uncaring. And they all said, well, not the little one. He loved his teacher first year in school in kindergarten, and he loved all the other teachers that he interacted with. But the older boy said, yeah, there's been some teachers that are, you know, kind of like get belligerent with you because they think you're going to be belligerent with them. And I said, how does that make you feel? And they said, not good, because they make the assumption that we're bad kids before they even wait to find out. And, of course, this goes along with what I say to everybody about getting the rest of the story and seeing both sides of an issue. If you don't do that, then there will be opportunities for you to misjudge somebody, absolutely, hands down, no doubt about it. And kids, it's hard to judge them even when you know everything, because kids are very versatile and kids also are just learning who they are. So what they are today could change later today, and certainly could change by tomorrow. So I found this very interesting, though, and the one little girl that was here with my grandson, like I said, who is 8 years old, and she was very cute about some of the things she said. She said, you know, if somebody's mean to me, you know, I just make sure I tell a teacher or a principal. And I said, aren't you afraid that if you tell the teacher that they're going to be madder at you? And she kind of sat there and looked at me for a few minutes. And AJ, the grandson, said, yeah, sometimes that happens. If you tell the teacher on somebody, if you tattletale, then sometimes, you know, they get madder at you. I said, so maybe what you should do first is talk to the kids and just say, you know, don't pick on so-and-so. Or like AJ did, you know, if you keep being like this, you're not going to grow up to be a good man. And his little friend said, okay. And I said, don't put yourself in any kind of danger ever. If you're afraid of somebody, get away from them. And I asked them today if they were ever afraid or felt that they were in any danger in school. And they both looked at me kind of shocked and said, no. And I said, good. If that changes, you need to tell somebody that cares about you. And they both said, okay. So I do think that it's maybe not quite as horrific on a big scale. I certainly know firsthand, because of all the research that I've done, that there's a lot of heartache out there for kids. And as I mentioned before, I have personally spent time with some young girls who have hurt themselves or done things, and that because they are so depressed. And again, it doesn't always come from school, and it doesn't always come from outside. Sometimes it's a lot closer to home, and sometimes there's other reasons for everything. But in the perfect world, if things like that are happening, then the people in the outside will be paying attention and will get some suitable help for kids that are going through that. As we've talked about many, many, many times, more often than not, if you accuse somebody of being a bully, if you wait for an explanation, Izzy taught me that they absolutely positively see themselves as the victim. And, of course, counseling couples, I see that on a regular basis. Often a couple sees themselves as the one that's being abused, not the abuser. And I can understand that. I really can understand that, and I can certainly understand that with kids, because if you are really not a bully in the sense of the word bully, somebody who just walks around looking for who to hit on top of the head, like we've talked about before, our old, well, like cartoons and things like that, who made the bully be big and meaner than everybody else and grumpy and just went around looking for trouble. I don't think those kind of bullies are the issue. I think it's the ones that are already kind of hurt and are looking to hurt somebody else. So that's another reason why I so appreciate the way Izzy Kalman has taught us how to deal with that, and that is by, you know, softening it and turning it into a less aggressive confrontation by saying, you know, what did I do to you? Why, are you mad at me about something? I love that. And in my own personal life, I must say that 9 times out of 10, that's how I've dealt with people who have come to me in the service industry who are very angry about something, not necessarily at me, but angry. And I've always been able to deal with people like that by, first of all, listening and letting them unload, and then, you know, having a little empathy for them and compassion, not necessarily siding with them, because many times I'm on the other side of the fence. And if I say they're absolutely positively right, then I make the people I work beside every day look bad. So it's tricky, but it's certainly doable. And to be able to hear both sides of an issue, of course, is usually the most important facet. I did want to talk again tonight about some of the things that we talked about through the week. And, of course, the wonderful time we had last night with Jeff and Shelley talking about Jeff's book and the fact that you read some more of it every night so that it lasts for a while and it gives your youngster an opportunity to have some anticipation for what you're going to spend time doing that evening. And good anticipation, not anticipation about trying to finish the homework or learning how to make your bed over again or, you know, any of those kind of things that are all the tasks and the chores that you try to teach a young person, but something that's warm and comforting and cozy. I loved the fact that he made his book like that. And I can't wait to share that information with the other lady that we've had on the show, Linda, in regard to her books. I think that was a really, really good idea to be able to have a book where they could. I mean, years ago, I guess that's what you did with the book, because if you read Tom Sawyer, you didn't read it all in one night. But then you're talking about somebody who's possibly a little bit older, and a story about a caterpillar is probably a much younger child. So I just loved it. And I also appreciated the fact that he's written some books in regard to not getting cheated when you make a major purchase like a vehicle. And I think many of us do get cheated. And I think one of the most important things that came out of that conversation was the fact that you shouldn't do it in a hurry, that you should have all of your ducks in a row, and you shouldn't wait until you have to have a car today. You can't leave without a car, otherwise you're not going to go to work tomorrow. Don't do that. You know, you have to plan ahead and give yourself enough time to do what you need to do. The same with purchasing anything that is a large purchase and something that's going to last you for a long time. I think I know people that have even bought homes in a hurry and didn't pay attention to where it was or the neighborhood or where the schools were or what kind of water they have or any of those kind of things. So I do believe that there's a lot of things that need to be considered, and I appreciated his information in regard to all of those things. And then, of course, Wednesday night we talked about the pill mills and the addiction to prescription drugs. And I still am kind of mulling over some of the information I got and some of the things that I understood, because I must tell you, I know a lot of people, even my age people, who are, I'm not going to say addicted to, but certainly dependent on some of these kind of drugs, certainly dependent on Xanax and some of the other things that take away some of the anxiety. And it's scary. It's very scary. And it could end our world as we know it if we don't get a handle on this. I don't think drugs will ever go away, just like alcohol will never go away. I mean, they tried with prohibition. You know, the peace pipe. Originally, the peace pipe was opium. And that's how some of our forefathers mellowed out. So some of these things will never go away. But the truth of the matter is, anything you do that runs you instead of you running it, you have a problem with. Anything. I don't care if you're talking about drugs, alcohol, food, sex, gambling. I don't care what you're talking about. If it has started to run you instead of you running it, then it's a problem. And, of course, the pill mills, some of those people should, you know, I hope they have to explain to their maker what they were thinking, just like the drug dealers on the streets will have to explain to their maker exactly why they found it was our right to sell things like this and make a profit ruining other people's lives. So, and of course, we did a little bit about the Cheerios ad with the interracial family, which I saw again on TV today. And I heard some interesting feedback on that after the show that I talked about it, and that was that people wondered if it would have been different if the parents had been reversed, if mom had been black and dad had been white. I couldn't even go there. I said, oh, my God, you know, talk about petty. Everybody needs more to do, I think. So we did talk about that, and then, of course, we were all blown away by some of the facts and figures that I was able to hunt up about our mess with the IRS. And I am still having a lot of trouble figuring out how anybody got away with that. I don't even get it. For those of you who didn't listen to that show, $50 million was spent on 225 conferences. $50 million. Now, for me, I mean, I will never see $50 million. I will never see $1 million. I mean, short of winning the lottery. $50 million since 2010 were spent on 225 conferences. Now, I guess somebody could explain that and somebody could make it sound feasible, except for this little tidbit, which was there were no credits given to anyone who came to the conferences. Now, if you're a part of a big corporation and you do any extracurricular activities to increase the knowledge of the business that you are working in, or education in regard to the business you are working in, or people skills in accordance to the business you are working with. Anything I've ever done like that, having been in the hotel industry for many, many years, hotels and restaurants and bars, we did lots of training. I mean, one of the most strenuous trainings I ever went through was at a Denny's restaurant. My God. But you had to sign papers. And if you got credited with going to a special class, or if you did something that made your store look better, you signed a piece of paper, you got an accreditation, and it went in your employee jacket. Nobody with the IRS signed any sign-in sheets to say, yes, I attended. There were no credits given to anyone. And there's been no disciplinary action against anyone at this point in time. But to add insult to injury, on top of that $50 million, the people, the planners for all these conferences got cash awards. I mean, that just blew me away, too. I don't get it. And then the fact that they went into detail about the conferences, there were no negotiations for anyone. In other words, if you walked in, say you were a food vendor, and you said, okay, I can make meals for 100 people, and it will cost you $300 a plate. They said, okay. Now, these are fictitious numbers, everybody. I'm just off the top of my head. But there was no negotiation. There were no bids taken. They didn't go to somebody and say, okay, less. Or hotel rooms, when they're going to do a big conference, to use the conference room in a big fancy hotel. No negotiations for 50 rooms. They paid top dollar and asked for more perks. So I found that to be horrible. But one of the reasons, of course, is because the IRS is capable and has in the past and will continue to do in the future ruined many people's lives, taking entire paychecks from people if they owe back taxes. And yet this kind of money is spent, you know, my grandmother used to call them like drunken sailors. So all of these things we've talked about this week, and I think it was a fun week. Like I said, I enjoyed talking with Jeff and Shelley last night, and we got some interesting conversation. And I always get calls after I do some of these shows with a little bit more feedback, and I do appreciate those. I do like to hear from people, and I do like to know what people are thinking. I would also like to say that in all the research that I've been doing, there's always a bit of a balance for people doing wonderful things. And I don't ever want to lose sight of that, because I don't want everybody to think of Renee's heart to heart about being all the sad and the, the unprofessional things that are being done out there, even though I think we should always be aware. I think we should also be aware of all the wonderful things. And I've mentioned some of these organizations before, because when, in my lifetime, tragedy has struck, many years ago, tragedy struck us, and the Red Cross was wonderful to us, as were many churches and many organizations that were run by friends and neighbors. And when my eldest son got hit by a car, we were only in Florida for 6 months, and by rights, I should have been sitting there all by myself, and I wasn't. Many people came out of the woodwork to support me, bring me coffee, take food to my house for my other kids and my husband. People are really wonderful like that. And then, of course, the latest episode, of course, with my grandson, people were amazing. And when I tell you that there was not a spot on the walls in his hospital room that you could have put another thumbtack in, I mean it. People from sports personalities to Ozzy Osbourne were there to support him. And phone calls and letters and cards. And still, there are people that I'm friends with today that were generated from that tragedy. And I also met the people that organize and direct Neighbors for Neighbors. And Neighbors for Neighbors is an amazing, amazing organization. And they were designed originally to just help neighbors in further, considerably further south. And now they have become so large that they are assisting people, I would say, in the whole southern tier of Florida. I would imagine they have their hand in some of those things, along with feeding people that are in trouble, really in trouble. They help organize all kinds of help for all kinds of people. And I think, you know, that's the way our world should be. And it is in a lot of ways. It really is. It's just that the tragedy often outshouts the good stuff, and that's a shame. I also met a wonderful man who's talked on the show before, who, because of his own personal lifestyle and doing considerable prison time, and the way he always told me, I got out of prison and didn't have any brothers left, didn't have any friends left. They were either in prison or dead. And I thought, I better do something to change all of this. And indeed he has. He organized an organization called YAS, and it's Youth Achieving and Succeeding. And he has been in my home with several young boys that he mentors and keeps on an even keel, and is involved in lots of different schools in further south, in Miami, Homestead, those areas. And right now he is out of town, and I intend to have him on the show again soon, because I think he's very inspirational. And I love the fact that he realized that he could either keep on being who he was, because, you know, it's the cards he was dealt, and it's the life he came from, and it was the neighborhood he lived in, and he could have blamed everybody but himself. He could have made it sound like that was the way it was supposed to be, because that's where he was. And, I mean, you've heard these stories before. That's not what he did. That's really not what he did. He stood up and said, I have to make some changes. And the first place I'm going to start is with me. And I talk about that all the time. And I think that's the most important thing we can do for everybody we love, is first make the adjustments on ourselves. I have another very, very close friend who is French. And a couple times in my life when I was struggling with some personal things at home, as you all know, I have a very big family, so there's never a dull moment. And he worked with me, and he truly, for the first time in my life, made me understand. He has a saying called driving your own car, and made me laugh the first time I heard it. I thought it was kind of amusing. Drive your own car. Well, of course I'm driving my own car, you know. And then I sat and I thought about what he had said to me, and all of a sudden this little headlight, if you will, went on, and I realized what he meant. He meant on my journey I needed to drive my own car. And indeed that's true. And instead of blaming everybody else for why I can't drive my own car, or allowing someone else to drive the car for me, is my responsibility. And I think that's important for our young people to know as well. I think that they need to know that you are who you make of yourself, not you are of where you come from, not you are of who you came from, not you are because of what life has dealt you. Those are all stories that you tell yourself to accept the things that you don't really want to accept. You can be anybody you want to be, and they're your choices. And if you stand up and decide who that is, maybe you won't. Maybe you'll decide that you're more than happy to not be front and center. That's okay too. But it should make you happy. Whatever your decisions are should keep you peaceful and happy in your own self. Otherwise, there may be the wrong decisions. And again, I'm not talking about everybody being leaders. You can't all, everybody can't be a leader. If we have no followers, why do we need leaders? But you can be somebody that the people who love you are proud of, and most importantly, that you're proud of. I think that's very, very important. I also have a young man that I've gotten very close to that I met during my, you would call it aftermath of lectures and speaking engagements that I got from people all over South Florida. I met Daniel Sohn, and I actually sit on the board of his directors, president of his board of directors for his organization, which is all about helping kids. And Danny is just a kid himself, but his story is one of survival, to say the least. And I do believe there will be a time when he will be a force to be reckoned with. And he cares very deeply. One of his biggest accomplishments is he came up with the teddy bears for kids that are misplaced. And I'm sure everybody knows about the motorcyclists that deliver teddy bears to the hospitals and all that kind of stuff. Well, as the story goes, and I hope I'm repeating it properly, that Danny told me over 3 years ago, was that he and his brother were adopted. They're twins. And his brother has some issues, and things happened in their home life, and they were put in foster care. Even though they were already adopted by somebody else who loved them very much, but stuff happened, and she was ill, and they put them in a foster home. And Danny was working at the school. He was just a kid, but he was doing extra work at the school, and he was worried about his brother because he could see that his brother was sad and having trouble functioning without their mom, as Danny was too, but he seemed to be handling it a little bit better. And on his way home, he's walking home from the school after his work hours, and he sees a bear laying on the sidewalk. And he picks it up, and it's kind of dirty. He brushes it all off and cleans it up as best he can. And he takes it home and gives it to his brother. And his brother makes fun of it. You know, what'd you get me a teddy bear for? I'm a grown-up, or I'm not a baby. I need a teddy bear and all this kind of stuff. And so he just, leaves it with his brother and forgets about it. And I don't remember how the story went. It was a few hours later or something. Danny got up, and out on the couch lays his brother, hugging the teddy bear. And he realized then that no matter what's going on with you, and no matter how old you are or what has happened to you in your lifetime, that you need that kind of love. You need something to hang on to. And that's how he came up with making sure that kids are displaced from their home for whatever reasons. Maybe they didn't even leave mom and dad. Maybe they had a house fire and they couldn't go back to their own room with their own toys and their own pillow and their own blankie and all those kind of things. These teddy bears brought some warmth and some solace to these kids. Beautiful. Beautiful. And of course, after he told me that story, I already liked him. When he told me that story, I figured I'm going to stay close to this kid the rest of his life, because I think that he's definitely somebody who's going to make a difference in this world. So, as I said, there's been all these wonderful people. And then, of course, on my radio show, I've met Israel Kalman, the man who is director of Bullies to Buddies. And his thought process is so incredibly balanced and pure that you can't help but feel as though it's the answer. It's the answer without any major side effects. It's the antibiotic that really cures the problem without making you lose your hair or making your skin break out, you know, all the wonderful disclaimers we hear on TV all the time. This will really work, and there are no side effects. If we can actually, by being kinder and more respectful to somebody, stop them from being mean to us, it's the perfect scenario. And he also talks about, and I mentioned this tonight with the kids when we talked, that if you tattle all the time, the person who is being aggressive to you will just get more angry because now you've gotten them in trouble. And that doesn't that make sense to everybody? And I know I've told the story about my mom with my sister Barbara and I. If Barbara told on me, I got a nickel. If I told on Barbara, she got a nickel. And my mother's thought process was the fact that we'd be so angry with each other, we didn't want the other one to get a nickel, so we didn't tattle on each other. So when I told Izzy that, he laughed and he said, your mother was very smart. And I said, I guess so. I never thought about it, but it worked with my sister and I. We didn't tattle on each other. But the whole point is when you get somebody else involved, when you have a problem like that and you don't learn how to stand on your own two feet, it makes your legs a lot weaker. If you can't learn to stand up for yourself, eventually you can't stand up for yourself. And that's not good. And that's not where we all need to head. We need to be able to be self-sufficient, all of us. And we need to teach our kids to deal with their problems in a way that is not harmful and that doesn't give them fits of anxiety so that they have to turn to something else to make themselves be happier again. It's all about learning how to be responsible and stand on your own two feet. Now, something I've promised since I first started this show, and I'm going to end the show tonight by reading the words to the man in the mirror. And I think they're very prevalent today, and my heart aches for Michael Jackson and his family. I'm going to make a change for once in my life. It's going to feel real good, going to make a difference, going to make it right. As I turn up the collar on my favorite winter coat, this wind is blowing my mind. I see the kids in the street with not enough to eat. Who am I to be blind? Pretending not to see their needs, a summer's disregard, a broken bottle top, and a one-man soul. They follow each other on the wind, you know, because they got nowhere to go. That's why I want you to know I'm starting with the man in the mirror. I'm asking him to change his ways. And no message could have been any clearer. If you want to make the world a better place, if you want to make the world a better place, take a look at yourself and then make a change. Take a look at yourself and then make a change. I've been a victim of a selfish kind of love. It's time that I realized that there are some with no home, not a nickel to loan. Could it be really me pretending that they're not alone? A willow deeply scarred, somebody's broken heart, and a washed out dream. They follow the pattern of the wind, you see, because they got no place to be. That's why I'm starting with me. I'm starting with the man in the mirror. I'm asking him to change his ways. And no message could have been any clearer. If you want to make the world a better place, if you want to make the world a better place, take a look at yourself and then make a change. I'm starting with the man in the mirror. I'm asking him to change his ways. And no message could have been any clearer. If you want to make the world a better place, then take a look at yourself, then make that change. So, that's the way I feel. If you really want to make the world a better place, take a look in the mirror and make that change. So, everybody, from my heart to yours,
good night and God bless. And I will be back Monday evening. Have a wonderful weekend. Good night, everyone.